Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
In my 27 years as a Victorian policewoman, I investigated everything from a stolen bicycle to a stolen life. Policing taught me a lot about human nature, which I explore in my podcasts with a variety of fascinating guests discussing the human side and impact of crime. Not only on their lives, but mine as well. My podcasts are not suitable for children and some adults for that matter. If you find yourself affected by my subject matter, please contact Lifeline or any other support service or person that you feel comfortable with. My guests provide their recollection of an event or incident, sharing their thoughts and their emotions, but it's theirs. And not everyone will agree with them. I understand that. And I hope you do too. Thank you.
It was a really pivotal moment because what I realised, which I didn't realise beforehand, was that that sort of 15 or however many years of policing I was at that stage wasn't actually for nothing. I was able to get into a university degree and actually get credits. So all of a sudden I was like, wow, it wasn't a complete waste of those years.
Today is part two of my interview with Dave Evans. And just to recap, Dave was a member of Victoria Police for 23 years until he was ill health retired due to being diagnosed with what Dave refers to, is a psychological injury. Dave began to feel the weight of encouraging a victim to report a traumatic offence when they were hesitant or didn't feel they could do it, and then witness their distress with how the justice system failed them. The impact of this continual burden took its toll on Dave, as he knew it was his encouragement which had initially given the victim the courage to navigate the judicial process and for it to too often break the victim. But it broke Dave too. The justice system needs to support, understand, and consider the victims and witnesses more regarding their emotional well-being. And let's not ever forget the police, who, like Dave, are the conduit between all these parties. So this week, Dave shares with us the moment that he realised it was him who had the problem, not everybody else as he thought, and how one woman's desperation to help him, and which he initially took as interference in his life, actually saved it. Dave tells us of the anguish, almost torture, that he encountered in organising for a petrified interstate witness to come to Melbourne to give evidence, and the anger that he felt at how she was treated by the system, to the point he went home that night and advised his superiors it was his last shift. He'd had enough. But then he was managed so well by his superiors during this time that he was able to return to work, but it certainly wasn't smooth sailing. One day, 30 minutes into his first shift at a new station, the phone began to ring, and he watched the phone and realised he was just finished for good. He just couldn't answer it. He froze. This time he really was done. But we've often heard the saying, haven't we, about where one door closes, another opens, and open it did for Dave. Dave has now has many strings to his bow, one of which has been to start up a group with his mate Cleve called TJF, The Journey Forward. What a great initiative. Have a listen and hear more about this wonderful idea, which is helping others see life more positively. Anyway, have a great week and we'll talk next week. Thanks. See ya. And so we are talking about your decline now.
Yeah.
How long into your career did you start thinking there's something wrong here?
I think that looking back on it, I remember before I even went to Socket, and I was sort of, you know, encouraged by some senior members to look at becoming a detective. I remember having the conversation around, look, things are not great at home, and I don't know if it's the right time for me. And I certainly just thought that, you know, my family were being difficult at that time. That's what I thought. They're not supporting my career, and they're making my life very difficult, and they're out of step with me. So I certainly think in hindsight that that was the beginning of it. And I recall during that time, maybe just before or just after I started Socket, I remember I don't know, at the time it was a problem, but in hindsight it was a life-saving event or a marriage-saving and probably arguably life-saving. I've come home one day and there was an article on the bench about, I think it was called something like post-traumatic stress disorder in police or something like that. It was out of the Age. And I remember I come in and I saw it and I said to my wife, her name's Paulette, I said to Paulette, I go, what is this? And she kind of looked at me. Obviously, the way I asked the question was pretty evident there was going to be a conversation had. And she said, look, a friend and a really good friend of ours sent it in the mail because she thought that Paulette needed to read it. And hang on a second.
Take your time. That's all right. I completely get that because you're going to make me cry now. but we see it as everyone else's problem and not our own.
Yeah.
And it's a very lonely place to be.
Yeah.
That you feel like you're the only one in the world.
Yeah.
It's terrible. But yeah.
So and I'll keep going. So now this article's there, and we had this really heated conversation about. I told Paulette that her because she wasn't my friend at that moment in time. I decided she was now just Paulette's friend, and I said she needs to mind her business and she can get stuffed and all the rest of it. And I was furious. And anyway, and that, you know, even then I still just thought she was being ridiculous and how dare she interfere in our marriage and blame me for, you know, and all this sort of stuff. But I guess as time progressed and I recall we're great friends and I really value her friendship.
But she was brave.
Yeah,
she actually called it out to say, I'm worried about Dave.
Yep.
I think this is a problem. Yeah, and that wouldn't be easy. And and I understand you saying it's none of her business. Who does she think she is?
Yep.
But I think that's a fairly common reaction when you feel like you've been almost caught out.
Yeah.
That you think, you know what? They are spot on. And when you go away and think about it, don't you? You think, my God, she's right.
Yeah, she was spot on, absolutely spot on. And so I know that I recall then it was a little while later, but when sort of it all, you know, became apparent that actually I was not well and I started to sort of get onto that journey of recovery, I remember speaking to her and I said, look, if I owe you the biggest apology of all time for something that you don't even know I probably said. And you know, she was very gracious in her response.
Yeah.
And you know, we still talk about it to today and when we catch up. And you know, I'm just in reality, I'm really grateful for that happening.
Oh, yes. Paulette's friend is. Thank you.
Yeah. For what it eventually supported me to do, and that is to look at myself and think about sorting my shit out, but more so to give Paulette and my daughters some validation that it's not them, it's actually where I'm at. And I think given the circumstances of our relationship at that time, they probably not only needed it, but they really deserved it. That happened before I even knew. I think that the reality was I didn't know. And even on the day that I went off work, I still didn't know. I sort of think that I'd found a reason to go off to someone to be angry at. And that was that particular incident related to a court matter. And I'll just make it really quick because we've been talking for quite a while. But it was basically a court hearing didn't go ahead, and it wasn't actually my matter; it was someone else's matter. But I was stepping in because they were off, and the prosecutor had come out to me and said, "We can't get a judge." This was like 4 days after the supposed trial date start date. And, the victim survivor was just terrified. They'd moved into state. They were coming back. Yeah. They were in some pretty dodgy sort of motel that they'd been put up in, and, going to collect them every morning and bring them in and then taking them back. And they were literally not leaving because the perpetrator was on bail. And so now this day come around and they go, "We're not going to get a judge. So you're just going to have to tell your victim to head home and come back in 6 months." And I said, "Are you serious? Like, have you got any idea how this is impacting her? And I don't know whether she'll come back, sort of thing. I don't know if she's capable of it because she's exhausted." And they sort of said, "Well, she just has to because that's the way it is." And I said, "Well, what do I say? Like, what do I say to her?" And the words from the prosecutor were, "Well, it's up to you what you say, but at the end of the day, she's not our priority. Because there's people who are who are on remand." And I just remember, firstly, I got really angry, and the first thing that came into my mind was violence, to be honest. But it was like my head exploded, and I just couldn't.
Well, I can relate to that. Yeah,
I couldn't. Yeah. I just left that day, and I went and did my best to support the person who this lady who was now heading back interstate, and got all that done, and then I went home and I just rang my boss and said, "I'm just ringing to let you know that I'm not coming back." And he was like, "Oh, what's happening?" sort of thing. And I said, "I'm just not coming back. I'm not doing it anymore." And he went, "Oh, do you want to need some time off? What do you want to call it? Do you want to have some leave or some long service leave?" I said, "I don't give it a toss." I said a different word. "I don't give a toss what you call it. I'm just not coming back." And that boss just managed the situation, I think, as well as anyone could manage it. And look, I guess that's one of the things that I'm fortunate that the managers I've had along the way have been brilliant. And he and my sergeant, they were both absolutely fantastic. They gave me the space I needed. They gave me the time I needed. There was no questions, expectations. It was genuine support and interest in my well-being. And care.
And care. Yeah.
And I think at that time, I shouldn't say at that time, everyone along the way since I went off has, with the exception of a couple that I feel and I think that we'll talk about that later, but I think that relates to other matters in regards to this policy and procedure stuff. So I think they're decisions that perhaps – but they weren't helpful for me and my return to work, my self-esteem, or my recovery. So, they were brilliant and, it's, again, something that I'll be forever grateful for, the way they supported me And we're really genuine about it. You know, and I know that unfortunately not everybody gets the support that I've had, or they certainly don't feel that they are getting the support. But I feel very fortunate to have had the people involved in my injury recovery and return to work that I did have, and then exit from the job, have been absolutely fantastic.
So you were able to return to work for how long before you just thought?
I went off
when almost flogging a dead horse.
Literally, it was that. Absolutely, it was kind of this desperation to try and get back. So I went off in 2015 when I was at Socket, and then I decided to try and do a return to work at the CI down south, and I lasted there that day. I probably lasted about half an hour till the phone rang.
You're kidding me.
And I didn't answer the phone. I just looked at the phone with like absolute terror. And I didn't answer it. And all I could think of was the phone rang for ages and ages. And then someone finally answered it. And all I could think of was those detectives must be looking at me going, what is wrong with that man? So then I stayed there. I sat the day out. But then I went and saw the boss later in the day and said, oh, I can't do this. I'm so far away from being able to do this. And so then I went off for a while longer, and then I had an amazing return to work or injury management consultant. She was just so good. Like I could not think of a better
person. A lifesaver.
A lifesaver. There's no doubt that she then she supported me through the process of trying to return again. And so then what I ended up doing is I did a return to work at the proactive unit, youth resource officer role. And that seemed okay. I sort of went back, a couple of days a week and slowly built it up, and then eventually got back to being full-time again, and then with the support of my return to work persons, managed to get a position when one became available at the office, and I relinquished my detective's role simply because I saw that as the only option to try and get back. I knew that my days of investigation were gone, and I thought maybe I can, work with people more proactively, and it might be more, fulfilling and something I can achieve. So I did that for a short time. And then, and I guess in some ways, the role itself as at the proactive unit, it probably evolved a little bit in the time I was there and became almost a little bit more, we'll call it reactively proactive. And I just, what I sort of realized is it doesn't matter what position you go into, the moment that you step into a police station, and you put on your uniform and your equipment, you're a policeman, and you'll do
the role. And anything can happen.
And anything can happen, and you're required to deal with it. And so, anyway, so then there was a particular night I had been asked to go down and do some stuff further south at another station, and I was on my way there to do it, and just remember listening to the radio, and there was lots happening. On the radio and
the police radio, that is.
On the police radio. Yep. And I just recall all I did was just drive straight past the police station, did a U-turn, drove back, pulled over. Like I was completely beside myself. I was done. I rang police wellbeing. And what happened is, what was interesting is I was on the phone to police wellbeing, and the sergeant who had requested me to come over, he'd pulled up alongside me and he goes, are you from the other station? I go, yeah. He goes, well, what are you doing? And he was oblivious and obviously just wanted, someone out on the road. And I was probably rude to him. And
spent.
Yeah, I was done. And it would have been confusing. And we kind of had a conversation that wasn't really great given this, probably the position I was in. But But he was just doing the best that he could and had no knowledge of me. He'd never met me before. He didn't know my history. I thought that he handled the situation very well after he had a moment to obviously reflect on what had happened. And, you know, because I sort of went, and we kind of parted ways. And I said, I'm done. I'm going back to the office and knocking off. Which, I mean, in itself, if you're a supervisor, you're going, whoa, what's that all about?
yeah, you're right.
But obviously, as he's had a moment to think about it, he's obviously gone, whoa, that guy's no good. So then he obviously made a heap of phone calls and things were – and look, and it was really well done. I think that there was people – someone rang me immediately and someone met me at the station and it was really well coordinated and I thought he did a fantastic job, even though our initial conversation wasn't great.
Yep.
But he would have been caught so heavily off guard. So anyway, that was it. I finished then and then I never returned. And I must say, I kind of recall the, like even the police medical officer, she was brilliant. I remember I went and saw her one of the, sort of towards the end, I guess, and I went into her office one day and I said, I'm done. I said, I'm just pulling the pin. I'm quitting. Yeah. I'm finished. Yeah. And I remember her words were, do not quit. Do not resign. This is not the answer for you. We need to support you through this process. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had a really good conversation. And I was, once again, I was really fortunate that she was
guided
there for me.
You needed, you needed some guidance and she gave it to you.
Yeah, and she was terrific. And, you know, she didn't, I wouldn't say that she advised me. But she really helped me to consider my options and see the pros and cons and, to really think about my decision-making processes in a way that was more objective as opposed to I'm just done and the whole thing can get stuffed and I've just got to get away from it all, which, I know that I've got people that I've spoken to who are some friends who've done that along the way and it hasn't probably been in hindsight for them the best decision they could have made. And people, it seemed that the right people the right people just came along at the right time that supported me to make decisions that allowed me to exit the job in the most
dignified way.
And that's a good word, is the most dignified way that I could. So that was probably, that's how it all happened. So it was really, you know, from about 2015 until I actually finally finished at the end of 2021, that was probably the period of what I would say was just really a living hell for not more than me. It was a living hell for my family. That's probably the guts of it.
Dave, we might say here too that it is so important, like for Paulette and the family, it wouldn't have been easy for them. And we obviously don't mean to put them through what they've been through, but it says a lot about Paulette, the fact that she has stuck with you. She's had the hard conversations, you know, with that PTSD article.
Yeah.
God love her, because there's a lot of people that would just, you know, this is too hard, and I don't blame them, mind you, but it just shows obviously the love that you both share. You're very fortunate. What I wanted to touch on was, you know, when you've, and obviously leaving policing, a bit like me, you feel you've got no skills, you've got nothing to give, I'm, you know, useless, all those sort of self-doubt sort of things, but you actually – you've shown so many people that it's not the end of the world, as I keep saying. It's the end of that world that you knew, but it's the start of a whole new world. And you then got into psychology and social work, and look at you. You would never, ever have assumed, although, you know, like in, say, in 21 when you're just at the, or just prior to that, when you're at the bottom, you know, you feel like you got nothing. And then look what's happened. How did you get into what was all that about?
Well, I think the first thing is that those feelings that you described, useless, no hope, future's over, all the rest of those things, I certainly experienced every one of those. You know, I can sort of recall sitting on the floor in an empty unit when I'd on one of the occasions I'd moved out, and with a with a slab of beer, just thinking, crying, and thinking, "That's it, I'm done, and my life is completely over." And not necessarily, I certainly didn't feel like when I say I'm done, it wasn't a suicidal done. It was my life is a debacle and I'm done with it
what
all.
What a mess. Yeah, what a mess I've made.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So I certainly was there. And look, and I kind of was seeing a psychologist. I was probably seeing that psychologist weekly. If I saw her 50 times, that wouldn't be an exaggeration. In fact, I'm probably being conservative. But she was a really experienced psychologist. She was, I think when she finally did finish with me, she was 80. And her husband had been a war veteran and had experienced his own traumas, and she'd sort of done some training with the defence in that area, and she was fantastic. We didn't really. It was interesting because we didn't really do a lot of talking about particular incidents, but we did focus a lot on the future and where I was at today, as opposed to going over the old stuff. But she, in one of our conversations, you know, well into the you know, a long way down the track, she sort of said to me, "Why don't you consider studying? You have quite a bit of insight, and you know, you should look at it as an option, and maybe you should do psychology." And I was like, just hearing it was like, that's pretty nice. That's a nice thing to hear.
Someone
doesn't think I'm a complete burnt out waste of time. So I guess that was the seed. And so then I kind of went, I might explore that, because I'd been doing a bit of reading. I was quite interested because I sort of felt like I needed to work myself out, and I needed to work out what this term that I'd been labelled with was actually, what it really meant. So I contacted the uni and said, I'm thinking about doing this course, and I'm thinking, really, it's a 3-year degree. I'm thinking, and I'm going to do it part time. It's going to take me 6 months. I'm thinking, I'm going to be ready to retire before I even get there. but anyway, I spoke to them, and they said, I told them my experience and what I'd done, and they said, send through your certificates from the police, and they wrote down a heap of stuff, and then they called me back and they went, look, we can give you 12 credits, basically all the electives for psychology, and you just have to do the core 12 core subjects. And I was like, wow, that's fantastic. And it was like, once again, it was a really pivotal moment, because what I realized, which I didn't realize beforehand, was that sort of 15 or however many years of policing I was at that stage wasn't actually for nothing. I was able to get into a university degree and actually get credits for half a course. So all of a sudden I was like, well, it wasn't a complete waste of those years.
Yeah.
So then from there I got into it, and I did it. And look, it was really interesting. It was challenging because I wasn't particularly academic. And if they kind of allowed 8 hours, you know, if they sort of said, oh, this would probably take you about 8 hours, I'd allow like 8 days. But it was interesting because it talked about, I guess, human development. It allowed me to see how we become what we become. And I guess when I was doing the topics and the research and the assignments, I kind of was looking at it. I was looking at it and going, oh, that I can see that sort of when I think about myself. But I was then looking at it more from the perspective of other people, because you're researching other people, and that was the primary focus. So, and I got to the end of it and graduated, and my results were good enough to do my honours year, and I sort of had spoken to the same uni about doing it, and another uni about doing the honours year. And
yeah.
But there was just something about it that didn't, I don't know, there was just something about it, psychology, that I was like, I don't know if it's for me. Even though I loved studying and doing all the stuff, which in itself was unbelievable, I enjoyed studying, but I think at the time I just felt a little bit like it was, in the way the assignments were done, it was kind of like I was analysing people somebody who was perhaps had superior knowledge than them. And I don't think that sat with me, because it was kind of, I'd sort of, through that process of study, I'd come across that concept of power over people or power with.
Yeah.
And the study of psychology made me feel a little bit like power over. And I certainly was sick of power over being a policeman, because that really resonated with my role as a copper.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't want power over people. I can't do it. And so I spoke to a couple of psychologists and they said, why don't you look at social work? And I go, social work? They're the most annoying people in the world. There is no way I'll deal with them or become one of them.
And you are one.
That was because I guess my experience was, basically with people who are in child protection or DHS, and they're governed by, statutory legislation, and they're part of that organisation. So, and it was really a lack of knowledge, basically, of what the role was and what the job entailed. So I had this really obnoxious, ignorant attitude towards them. And so I went, no, I'm not doing that. So I went and spoke to some counsellors who I'd sort of met along the way, and they said, why don't you do social work? And I'm going, you guys got no idea. And but eventually I thought, I'm going to check out this social work thing. And so I looked at it and, learned a little bit about it and read about it, and I went, This is it.
This is me.
Yeah. This is what I'm looking for. And so then I got into the because I'd already done my degree, I had to do a master's, like a qualifying master's. So it's not a research master's. It's slightly different. But I've got into that. And look, I think that was the most significant couple of years of study in my recovery, because a lot of every assignment we did had a component of self-reflection looking at every decision, that every aspect of every assignment.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
whatever the topic, you had the first or a significant part of it was look at yourself, look inwards, look at your development, your history, your upbringing, your culture, your beliefs, all that sort of stuff as part of your decision-making, I guess, argument or submission. And that for me was huge because that allowed me to – it sort of taught me how to reflect properly and really I didn't even know what the concept of reflection was other than I would have gone, well, I think I made a good decision, so what's the problem? You know, but to actually learn how to reflect and discover yourself in a meaningful way it can be very confronting.
I bet it can. Gosh,
but it's extremely enlightening, and it allowed me to understand, I guess, the things that I've spoken about today in regards to why I became so unwell. And, like, for example, there's a really good video done by it's a thing called the Sight Collective, and Jess and Al, Jess is a psychologist and Al's a psychiatrist, and they have a video, and it's like a damn wall effect in regards to PTSD, and they talk about this act of betrayal that is sort of often the catalyst for it, and it's worth having a look at if you haven't seen it. And I was talking to somebody about it, and for me, and I sort of mentioned it as a possibility to consider, is we often look for the betrayal or consider the betrayal of something that somebody else has done to us in the job.
Yes. Yeah,
but
yeah.
What I realized is it was actually a betrayal of myself because of my actions and my behaviors and the way my beliefs around policing and my intent. Whilst it appeared good, my intent or my beliefs and true intentions were not necessarily aligned with my values. So that was kind of something that I really got out of that social work study. It was that capacity to truly self-reflect and understand my values and see how that organizationally, they have their code of ethics and they have the self-test, but they don't necessarily always align with your own values. And one of the things that I really think about a lot, and I think it's perhaps a huge gap in that ethical assessment tool that they use in VicPol, the self-test, it talks about the first one is the scrutiny, and it talks about the scrutiny of the public, the media, the organization, but it doesn't talk about the scrutiny of yourself, like if you scrutinize your own decision making and it's not always going to line up, but I think the key is to understand that is the case, and don't just go along following the you know what you perceive as the appropriate way of doing policing in accordance with their code of ethics, because if you're doing it blindly, then you'll probably find that there's a higher risk of violating your own values. But if you're aware of your own and you understand that they may not always be perfectly aligned, but to be able to have that, make that conscious choice or decision to go, right, I'm going to step away from my own values in this case because of this reason. And that's something that I certainly never did until after I've left, and then to be able to reflect on it is like, yeah, I can see the problem there. And I probably could have done a lot better and perhaps avoided the impact that it had on me if I had have been aware of that. So I think that that's something that perhaps could be a topic of conversation from as early as in the academy, to explore yourself and understand yourself and be aware of your values and see how they can work together, but how if they don't, to be aware of that and
not to lose your – individuality.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you find that during all your studies? This is going to sound a bit wanky, but you're now a social worker, so you won't think it sounds wanky. but did it make you be kinder to yourself with all these studies?
Yeah, yeah. And once again, I think it was understanding my values and understanding the different factors that influence behaviour, and not just mine but everybody's. And there's some theories out there that look, it's hard because there's that much information and so many different theories, and they all have sort of some, depending on, you know, once again, your own beliefs around how the world functions, they all resonate with people differently. But they were really helpful in forming my belief systems a little bit stronger and being able to see that decisions I made are about the decisions and not about me. As in, it's sort of like, doesn't make me a bad person. It means I may have made a decision that wasn't helpful or may have been unkind. And then to be able to explore, and it's a little, look, it's probably, it's a slightly different way of thinking if you're out of the job, but if you're still in the job, it's still really relevant, because if you're out of the job, you go, right, well, I don't need to comply or consider those organizational ethics anymore, so I can truly embrace my own and live accordingly. But if you're in the job, you can. I think that it's not that you can't embrace the organizations, but I think it's about being aware of your own and trying to get them to mesh.
To meet in the middle.
There's always going to be a bit of give and take. But I know for me, it was kind of towards the end when I started to become quite strong about my decision-making. What I found was, because there's so much policy around or procedure around jobs and the way we carry out and investigate jobs, that I was making this really black and white decision about, no, I'm not doing that because this is what I want to do. And then so I had the choice to either do what was in accordance with the policy and procedure, and then I'd go home and feel terrible about who I was, or I'd go, I'm going to do what I think's right, but then go home and be worried about the consequences of not following that. So it was kind of because of that black and white thinking and not looking at, okay, how can I make these things get a little bit closer together and do it in a way that allows me to sleep easy and feel relatively good about myself still. And I think it was that lack of awareness around the fact that was happening that led me down the path of just going, well, that's what the job says, that's what everyone else does, and that's what I'm doing, or I'm not doing it. I think it's about understanding that people come into the job with their own values and beliefs, and they may not be exactly the same as the organisations, but unfortunately I think if they're not discussed and identified and talked about, then there's going to be a huge the divide will become so big that it becomes insurmountable, so to speak.
I must admit, I think in our training there's very, very little really about not really. There is very little about emotions and feelings and all those subjects that you've studied. That I think for a group of people, as in police, that deal with so many different personalities, and I'm not talking about outside, I'm talking about within policing, all those different personalities, I think we need to learn more about ourselves before we start going out into that big wide world and, you know, trying to understand how other people feel. Like, if we don't understand ourselves, how can we understand others? I want to start winding up, but I don't want to wind up before you tell us about meeting Cleve and TJF.
Okay. So I guess because of my experience with police wellbeing and the people who were supportive during my recovery and, you know, my psychologist saying, why don't you look at this as an option and ending up doing that study, one of the things that I really felt passionate about was I guess using my experience in a way that was useful to others or potentially might benefit some other people who are either in it or potentially might find themselves, you know, struggling. And I didn't really know how I was going to do that. I sort of had some ideas about maybe, you know, working one-on-one and the idea of perhaps doing group stuff. And it was kind of just a bit of a pie-in-the-sky idea that I thought one day I'll get around to it. And anyway, I was at a I can't remember exactly, but I've got to almost think it could have been at a funeral. And I ran into Cleve, and we worked together at Cranbourne when I very first graduated and hadn't seen or spoken to each other for years. And, you know, we got chatting and telling him what I was doing, and then he told me about his website that it's a social media and website that he'd started that was called it was called Tango Juliet Foxtrot, and the slogan of TJF. And I was first a little bit taken back, and I was like, whoa, that's full on. And anyway, we talked about it, and he sort of said, you know, I wanted it to be a little bit controversial because it gets people's attention, and then when they read, they'll understand what it's all about. And his main goal was to create conversation, which then creates awareness and hopefully reduces stigma. So I thought, well, that's an interesting concept and I really like it. And then I read his website and there was a particular couple of sentences that he had written and about what he saw the three letters of TJF stood for. He said, it's always been a tongue-in-cheek saying amongst those in the job. It's not a negative thing, as some may believe. It acknowledges the fact that not every day is easy and some days are fucked. And I thought that is exactly the reality of not only policing, it's true of every job, I think. It's a term that, you know, has historically had a negative connotation to it, and I like the way he sort of reframed it into acknowledgement that, yeah, it can be difficult and it does take its toll, but don't think of it as a negative term and, you know, have a conversation about it with people. So I kind of like that. And anyway, I went away.
Just before you go on.
Sorry.
We just need to explain to the listeners that TJF in the job means, the job's fucked. And I don't know if we've actually said that out loud, but just for the listeners, that is what TJF represents in policing terms. So, sorry, so please go on. I just needed I don't think we explained that well enough. Yep.
Yeah. And I guess it's something that, you know, it's – I kind of look at people who have perhaps got to a point where they're really perhaps unwell or a bit – over the job, and they sort of rely on that or use that term in a way that it's a bit like, oh, I'm done with it. It's just the job's no good. And I kind of liked the way Cleve reframed it. And, you know, so I went away and we sort of spoke about the idea of maybe doing something together. And it was a bit of just one of those conversations that didn't really have a great deal of longer term purpose other than it was nice to talk about different ideas. And I was sort of, I don't know, I woke up one morning and, you know, I was thinking about it a fair bit, about what I wanted to do and how I was going to perhaps do something. And I came up with the term The Journey Forward as a name for perhaps a group. And I was like, I like that name because it sort of further reframes TJF. But it's like, well, we're happy to acknowledge that TJF is what it is, and some people think that. But let's get together and have that conversation, and let's think about something more positive in the journey forward. Because dwelling on the past and having those negative thoughts are not helpful to healing. But So we decided, we spoke about it, and then, you know, we decided to keep the logo, which was just the three letters TJF with a set of handcuffs. And I kind of looked at the logo and I thought, that's good, because it's kind of like, you know, the journey forward, breaking free from the cuffs of policing and getting on with your life. Or if you want to go back to work in the police, break free from the issues or the concerns that you have about the job, and let's understand how we can make it work so you can go back, enjoy your career, and actually probably potentially be a better policeman as a result. So anyway, I rang Cleve because I thought, if I'm going to do anything with those three letters and make it into a thing, I better talk to him because they're his letters. I kind of thought they're his letters, so I better have a chat to him. So I rang him and told him my idea, and he was like, yep, let's do it. And so then we procrastinated on that for ages, how we were going to do this thing. And then, you know, we fortunately, I knew a couple of ladies who owned a cafe. They worked at a place called Wellways, which I sort of did a few things for. They were supporting people with disability or mental health. And they'd left that job, and they'd started this cafe in Carrum. And I sort of had stayed a little bit loosely in touch with them. Anyway, I went and saw them and said, this is what I'm thinking of doing. And they were like, yeah, that's a great idea. And one of the ladies there, she's a social worker as well, and she said, right, so let's book a date for when it's starting. And I was like,
hang on a minute.
We're still in the process of procrastinating here. She went, no, let's make it happen. So we booked a date, and I said, well, let's make it in a month. She goes, oh, a month? She goes, I thought it would be quicker than that. I said, no, let's make it a month. Anyway, so sure enough.
I love it.
Yeah, that was a really important push that she gave us. And so we set the date and we kicked off. And, you know, we're growing. It's been and look, I don't want to speak on behalf of the other people who are in the group. Our community's growing. But there's people that are continuing to come back. I think they're enjoying it for what it is. You know, it's not therapy. It's certainly not a substitute for therapy. It's not trying to be that. I think it's critical that people have their sessions with their social workers or their psychologists, or, you know, whatever person is there engaged with, their psychiatrists. We are simply providing a place for people to come, engage with their peers, talk about their experiences, the way they've, you know, the things that they've done and explored to overcome their challenges and how they've found that. And so it's nice that we've got, you know, people who are in different stages of their journey, because you kind of learn from each other. Someone who's really, you know, sort of early on will talk about things that perhaps resonates with someone who's a bit further along, and vice versa. You know, you sort of can support someone to say, well, have you considered this? And, you know, and
about sharing information, isn't it?
It really is. It's not about giving people advice or telling them how to recover or get better. It's just simply sharing information and ideas. And you know, we're pretty strong on, if you want to talk about a negative experience, that's fine, but there needs to be some purpose to it. Whether the purpose is, I'm talking about this because this is how I overcome it, this challenge, I'm having this experience. Can we talk about it to see if someone else has been through something similar and might be able to give me some ideas to explore myself that might help me work through it? And I think the process of going through that and looking inward allows you to, or helps you to forgive yourself. And then I think when you understand why you made decisions you made along the way, I think, and then you're able to forgive yourself, I think that allows you to then forgive other people for some of the decisions that they make. Because I don't think anyone intentionally goes out to make a decision that is really unhelpful to somebody else. But unfortunately, like policing, when we go out and we make decisions that are really unhelpful to somebody, often, so does the organisation, and so do our managers. But I guess it's the unintended consequences of decisions that are made that is the problem, as opposed to,
you know, anybody going out there with pure intent to make a decision, that's unhelpful.
I think sometimes we can just get a bit overawed with all our own stuff, and yeah. I think sometimes it's good to share and hear other people's. And anyway, so what's the website, and just where do you meet if you can just help? Oh, and also, who is it open to? Is it just police members, former or current, or?
It's open to former or retired police, PSOs, PCOs, emergency services staff, frontline workers, and all of the support staff that are, you know, crucial to the functioning of those organisations.
Okay.
So it's really open to at the moment we have veterans, police veterans, and we have somebody from the medical fraternity who's on board.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. we meet fortnightly at a place called the Beach Bar in Carrum. And we chose that place, part of the reason we chose that place was probably because of its location. It's kind of because I live much further south and Cleve lives over on Phillip Island. So we chose a place that was a bit more central for people to come to. So Carrum was a good place. But one of the things we talked about was making an environment where we could have a space that was not medical. That allowed us to have an area that we could have those conversations, but then also for whatever, whether it was just because we wanted to or we'd finished and we wanted to socialize, we could then go and have a coffee or a beer or whatever people felt like having or something to eat.
Good.
A cafe that was almost like, come in, we'll meet, we'll have a chat, we'll go and do our business, so to speak. And then when we're finished, we'll go and have a little chat and a conversation and socialise, and then people can leave. And to take away the medicalisation of psychological injuries to a degree and make it an environment that's less medical and more friendly and social. So we do that fortnightly, as I said, at the Beach Bar in Carrum. And we have conversations. There's some weeks we might do an activity, like maybe a fortnight ago we went and did lawn bowls. So it's kind of about having those serious conversations in a fairly relaxed and fun way, and also doing some activities that are just purely social and allowing people to get out and do things that perhaps they either haven't done before or they've done before and they've enjoyed, and just see that they can do things in groups and enjoy things. So it seems to be going quite well.
What time?
10 a.m. We have it at 10 a.m. Okay. It goes for usually around 2 hours. And everyone's welcome. I suppose the only thing we're mindful of is the group. We kind of try to keep it, we want it to be big enough to be able to have good conversation, but not too big where people don't either get an opportunity or feel uncomfortable about speaking. So we kind of like to keep it around that 10-ish, maybe 12 at the most. And we've got a few people now who have come on board from interstate. We're looking at, we're in discussion at the moment. We're not exactly tech savvy. Looking at doing something online. We're looking at starting an online group. So people who are, either perhaps rural, unable to travel, don't feel confident about the travel yet, or don't want to come into that environment, or live interstate, we can sort of have a conversation online and use technology, to its best advantage, I guess. And then probably with those groups, what we might try to do is have a couple of events each year where everybody can come together and do something social. So that's kind of where we're looking at heading.
And the website?
The website is www.thejourneyforward.com.au.
And that's all one word, the all, journey forward?
Yeah, the journey forward's all one word. And it's if we do activities, we ask, you know, we get members to pay. Like we went and did lawn bowls, as I said, it was $5 and to play. And we ask members to pay that. We kind of are trying to stay away from the traditional sort of fundraising, I guess, because I think there's enough people in that space.
Yep.
You know, fundraising and doing a really amazing work and generating funds to support members. So we kind of just want to be looking at something that's a little bit different, I suppose, that no one else is doing at the moment, and just come together as a group, try to keep our costs as low or minimal as possible. And, yeah, so we've got a few ideas we're looking at to try and perhaps get out to more members and do things to, I don't know, just create conversation and allow people to be aware that we exist and things like that. So I guess it's a bit of a watch that space. But, yeah, at the moment it's really nice catching up and at the beach bar and just having those conversations and really exploring ourselves and our careers and our development as people and our journey beyond beyond the injury, as opposed to beyond policing, because people healing might involve going back to work and continuing their career, and if we can be part of the support process that allows people to do that, then that's fantastic.
Well, I think that's all strength to you and Cleve for doing that, because as you say, I don't think there's enough support for former members, and particularly those who are struggling a bit. But thank you for everything that you're doing and that you continue to do, and Cleve as well. And well, Dave, I can say it's been enlightening.
Yeah. Can I just say one thing quickly before we finish?
Yeah, of course.
Sorry,
you can.
I'll interrupt. But I was just thinking, I know that we've sort of talked about the journey forward and what we're doing, but I think something that's really important, I think, to from my experience, is I really encourage members or veterans to try and have confidence and trust in the various support agencies available, whether that's Police Wellbeing or the Association or PVV or Code 9 or Protectors. They're all, everybody who is involved in any of those aspects of support are all doing fantastic work. And I think that it's about sharing information about each other in a way that allows people to be aware of what's out there and to explore the options and find what works for them. We're an option, but there's a lot of options, and I think it's important that people explore those and take charge of their own well-being and look at all the different options and check them out, explore them, try them, see what works. Because I made a statement when I was at detective training school. I made a statement one day, and it was kind of a bit of a comical statement, but I said, even nothing is still something. So if you try something out and you feel that you've got nothing out of it, then that's something.
Yeah.
That's a step in the direction of your recovery.
Yeah, you're right. Because you're making a decision, aren't you? You're thinking, no, that's not right for me.
I agree. Sorry to interrupt, but I just felt like I wanted to express that.
Oh, no, and I agree. And I suppose what you're saying is that there is something for everyone. And, yes, the journey forward may not be for some. Something else may be for them, but just try something. As you said, something is better than nothing.
Yes.
Is that what you said?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, all right, Dave, look, thanks for everything you're doing. And I'm sorry that, your career – well, I suppose we're both sorry, aren't we? We would have loved to have still been doing it, but it just proves where you are and where I am. It just proves that it's not the end of the world. There is something else out there, and we have got so many skills that you don't realise you've got until you start digging and thinking, what the hell can I do?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, wonderful careers, but unfortunately they end prematurely. But I think if you can work through that, and there's certainly opportunities aplenty on the other side.
Yeah. All right. Thanks. It's been an absolute pleasure, Dave.
Thanks very much, Narelle.
Thank you. As you've probably noticed, we've moved to a new platform called Acast. I think that's the right expression, I've got no idea. And my previous reviews haven't transferred over. I need reviews. Could you do me a favour and put up a review? And thank you so much for your support and patronage. With your help, I can give you that little bit extra. Thanks.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.